Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Bravo Happy Hour. I'm your host, Megan O'Donnell. Grab yourself a drink and join me while I break down the week in Bravo TV news. Welcome to Bravo Happy Hour. I'm your host, Megan O'Donnell, and today's bonus episode is a book club moment going through Bethany Frankel's third book, A Place of Yes. This episode is blessed with the presence of Ali Hoff Kosick. Ali is a freelance writer, editor, and content manager based in Philadelphia. She has written for Marie Claire, Cosmo, Real Simple, Hello Giggles, Refinery 29, The Kitchen, and more. Ali is also a producer and host of the nostalgic, book-focused, feministy podcast, the SSR Podcast, which is what makes her the perfect guest on this book club episode of Bravo Happy Hour. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here.
So we were just talking about Bravo as like a guilty pleasure before this. So your show is a little bit of more highbrow than this one, considering we exclusively talk about Bravo, but let us know a little bit more about what your show's about.
Well, first of all, I think you might have the right idea, because sometimes I'm like, maybe I should just talk about Bravo. Like, maybe that's really what I'm called to do in the podcasting space. So my show is called the SSR Podcast, and sort of officially that stands for Silent Sustained Reading. And I don't know if you had that, but that was like an official like period when I was in elementary school, when you could like read quietly. And for me, it was the dream. But secretly, or at this point, not so secretly, SSR actually stands for Shit She Read. And every week on the show, my guests and I talk about a book from like our middle or high school days. So everything from Nancy Drew and The Babysitter's Club to more assigned reading kinds of books like Little Women and Animal Farm and everything in between. And we kind of look at it from a 2020 perspective, decide if it's totally let us down or if it maybe holds up. Often it's also somewhere in between. And it's a whole lot of fun.
Well, I'm guessing you guys haven't done any Bravo books on the docket yet. Unless you were
not
reading
yet.
These books in high school, which would be a little problematic.
I really want to know if there are girls or boys reading these in high school, because I need to talk to them, especially after this situation of reading Bethany's book, where I have to admit the second time. I need to talk to those teens.
Yeah, so we were saying before this is my second time as well. Yeah, I definitely think I read it like, now that I'm thinking about it, I actually think I did read it in high school, which is terrifying. And at the time, I can't remember when I read it. But regardless, I was definitely like young and impressionable and thought everything she said was like completely inspirational. Whereas now I read the first like 100 pages and it was so hard to get through because it's basically 350 pages of Pinterest quotes just like thrown into one big book. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, okay, let me finish this up on an audiobook just to get it done with. And so I could like take notes on my computer while listening. And for someone who talks as fast as Bethany does, this audiobook was 10 hours.
Oh, no.
So she read the whole thing. And I think I need a lobotomy because it was horrible.
I mean, I love her. I'm going to say up front, full Bethany stan, still mourning the fact that she's not on Roni anymore. She'll probably come back if we know anything about Bethany. But right. I don't know that I could listen to her talk for 10 hours in my ear. That would probably be a stretch for me.
Well, I have a feeling she had like a vocal coach going through it with her, like any person does when they're getting a voiceover, because yeah. She would say her sentences just like this, and there were only different cadences in her voice when she did a Jill Zarin impression and then a Countess Luann impression. But other than that, she never once broke the monotoned Bethany voice, which I'd never really heard before. And I mean, so this book is based on 10 principles that she believes that if you follow these 10 principles in your life, you will be happy, successful, et cetera, et cetera. Once I got to like the eighth one, I was completely checked out and I was like, okay, how many times can we say the same thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is a book by somebody who has read a lot of self-help, and like, you know, no shade to people who read a lot of self-help, but I don't know that people who read a lot of self-help should necessarily write self-help, if that makes sense, because I do feel like a lot of these are ideas that were probably great coming from their original source, but coming from my girl, Bethany, who again, love her. It just doesn't, it does not feel as genuine, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, especially at this point. So at this rate, she has done seasons 1 through 3 of The Real Housewives of New York. She has Bethany getting married, ? And Bethany Ever After. And I think about 6 months after this book was published, her and Jason announced their divorce, which then has been like, I don't even think it's over yet, like a very, 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 very long divorce. So it's kind of hard to read a lot of this where she's like talking about having the best relationship ever and having this partner in life who has changed her and has opened her eyes to everything and how quickly that changed. Like, it must be very difficult for her to even like look back on this book and think, oh my God, what the hell was I talking about? Did I even really know what I was saying? Or was I just kind of, you know, reading a script that like a publishing company gave her to basically write this book because they knew it would sell? Like, that's kind of what I think this book really was.
Yeah, I had a really hard time reading it because of the Jason stuff too. And because of the Brynn of it all, just because I feel like, you know, Brynn has already been caught up in this terrible custody battle. You know, hopefully at least right now, she doesn't know too much of it, but someday she's going to know that all of these details were out there, that her parents were in the middle of this very public situation that was really hostile. And the fact that like this book is out there that feels very, and I'm a huge fan, or I was a huge fan of Bethany Getting Married and Bethany Ever After. I actually bought both seasons and like had them on my iPad, like watched them on rainy days. Like, so a lot of the scenes that she talks about in this book, because she does that a lot too, where she basically like just paraphrases scenes that we all already saw on her show. And it's like, if somebody's buying this book, they've already seen this. But anyway, I digress. Like, it feels sort of like the book was sort of a marketing vehicle for her potential like continued spinoff, because I would imagine that like had they not gotten divorced, they would have had this show like for a few more seasons. And so it sort of felt to me like the book was written to kind of promote that, which is like a valid thing in the world, but the fact that their marriage obviously ended so soon after it was published, and they went from this like very apparently loving relationship that she's detailed like really within an inch of its life in this book to 6 months later being in a vicious divorce, it makes me sad. And I feel like someday like that will be upsetting for Brynn. And I love Brynn. Peanut.
Yeah. No, that is all very, very accurate. So A Place of Yes is about how to stop saying no and start saying yes to your own life. She wrote in the intro that she has written this book 3 times, and this was the 3rd version that she got to. So I want to say, honey, like, let's go back to V1 and V2. Like, let's see what was in that, because I have a feeling that that would probably be a little bit more truthful. And she did have nuggets of passive aggression towards Jason and Jason's family, which definitely were a lot of like, and his family, I believe, was definitely a lot of the reason why they broke up. Of course, like, he probably, I mean, they both had many, many issues, but I think his family being more of a quote unquote normal family definitely played a big role in why she kind of felt like she wasn't good enough for him and why they always kind of had these issues. And so these 10 rules will apply to everything in life: health, money, work, friends, family, love, eating, dieting, and anything else you struggle with, blah, 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 blah. And again, like, you get a little tidbits into a lot of different parts of her life. And she's just very complicated based on her childhood, which, I mean, we'll get into in part 1, but...
part 1 of 10.
Yeah, no, 10 rules. I'm sorry, not
I'm sorry. Rules.
10 rules. So the first one is breaking the chain, which means recognizing the patterns that you're carrying forward in your life, patterns that belong in your past, and choosing to go a different way than those patterns that have been destructive to you in your past. So she definitely opens up a lot about her mom in this, whose name is Bernadette Burke. I guess she was married 4 times, and I didn't realize this, but Bethany was born on her mom's 20th birthday. Like, can you imagine being 20 years old and giving birth?
No, I mean, I just turned 30 literally yesterday, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I would have a 10-year-old. It blows my mind. I can't imagine. I mean, I have a dog, and that's sort of like enough for me right now.
I've actually been rewatching Gilmore Girls when I'm not watching Bravo, and it's insane to think, like, at the beginning of Gilmore Girls, Lorelai's 32 and Rory's 16, and I'm like, what on earth? And then I'm like doing the math the other day, and I was like, oh my God, so my kid would be this age? I'm like, oh my God.
Oh my God, fuck, you just made me feel so old. Lorelai was 32.
32. But also, like,
Oh
I
my
mean,
gosh.
she had like raised Rory in like a shed at the back of the inn. So it's like, yeah,
True.
that was
I'm
not
not living in a shed, so that's like,
fun.
I guess that's good.
That's a
But yeah, I
huge
mean,
cop.
yeah, so yay me, 30 and not living in a shed. Again, no shade to anybody who is, because look, you can turn into Lorelai Gilmore, and that's great for you. But Break the Chain was crazy because I was fascinated, like learning more about her childhood. And again, I do feel like because I was so deep in the Bethany world at this point, like I'm scrolling through all the notes. I like highlighted way more than I should have. I was
I
reading on
have
my
eight pages of
Kindle.
notes. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't even know if these are going to be useful because there's just so many of them as I'm scrolling. But it is, I mean, it's interesting to like hear more about where she came from. And I'm definitely like a Bethany apologist. So I don't feel like we should have to explain a lot of her behaviors, but I can see how people who are not Bethany apologists could read this and like maybe understand a little bit more about why she is the way she is. Because I mean, it is crazy. Her mom sounds like she was really hard to live with, and she definitely has some like dad stuff going on. And I mean, so many of us do. So I did like to sort of get in her head a little bit more. But I do wish, like, I mean, I have a lot of sort of notes for like improvements in this book. Should she ever decide to go back and, give it another shot,
The
which I don't
editor's
think she
notes.
will. Yeah, she would really have to like slash all of it to do with Jason. But like, I just wish the rules themselves had like more creative phrasing, like break the chain, not revolutionary girlfriend. I'm sorry. It's just not. You can do better. You are a branding whiz. Like, you took Sonia to task on branding. So why are these rules not more creative? I know you can do it.
I completely agree. And I even felt like a lot of the names of the sections, like some are Act On It, Everything's
Right.
Your Business, All Roads Lead to Rome. Like, why is the title of All
Right.
Roads Lead to Rome all about becoming a chef and going on Martha Stewart's Apprentice? Like,
Right.
it didn't really make sense to me. And as I was trying to organize it, I was like, well, how are those rules? They're just kind of like chapter titles.
Right, like all roads lead to becoming a chef would have been better.
But
I mean, kind of dumb, but better.
no such thing. Well, yeah, I guess this was kind of like pre-Bethany being like a branding maven too, because even
True.
like when she came back and Heather Thompson was like, yeah, I have a very successful business. And Bethany's like, well, I'm going to tell you all the reasons why it's not successful and it could be more successful. And Heather's like, okay, I certainly did not ask. Like, I'm no Sonia. You can't talk to me like I'm Sonia. That is not how this works.
Megan, Bethany had a really hard childhood, okay?
That
So
explains it all. Well, now,
maybe
like,
you should read the book again and be reminded of like how hard it was.
well,
I
I
told
think
you I was an apologist. I'm going to continue. Like, you
that.
cannot throw me off my apologist game.
But okay, so yeah, her childhood was really rocky. She was moving all over the country with her mom and the dad. Her mom was drinking a lot, definitely had trouble with drugs that they kind of like peppered through. They grew up on the racetrack, which is like full of like booze and gambling and young women and debauchery. So that's like the backdrop of Bethany's childhood, which is definitely not really like, stable, like children kind of need, like no routine. She definitely moved around from her mom's house to her dad's house at one point. She was living there when she was 4 years old, and she just was living with the dad in California. The mom wanted to leave, and so she up and left her with the dad, and the dad spent most of the time at the track and would leave her with like 19-year-olds that he was sleeping with. And there was like one story where she was like, this girl forced an avocado into my mouth, and now I've never eaten an avocado for years. I'm like, oh my God, what? But
That's
then
dark. I mean,
it's
dark,
really
especially
dark.
in the age of guacamole and avocado toast.
I do vaguely remember her making like a gorgeous Cobb salad, I think when they were in like Was it Turks and Caicos or was Mexico? Oh, it was when Luann did Don't Be All Uncool, because there was that afternoon where like Sonia and Ramona wanted to like go party, and it was like the day that Bethany was like making lunch for everybody, and they're like, let's just go out for lunch, as she's chopping all of the food to make lunch.
She's like, I'm a chef. Yeah. And then it comes, are you a cook or are you a chef? It always comes back to that.
Oh my, I forgot about, are you a cook? You're a cook, not a chef, and it's creepy.
You're creepy. How do you forget that? I mean, Scary Island, come on, like the highest point of all the high points.
I mean, I think the last few, it's crazy because New York has so many cash trips that are just completely explosive, whether it's like Cartagena, like anytime they've been to Mexico, even like this season where they just went to like Providence, Rhode Island, like there was a ravioli thrown at the dinner table. Like we overlook that, but
and that's why we love them.
It's so true. But Bernadette, her mom, definitely had like eating issues as well. She said her mom was like addicted to taking laxatives. And one time she took Bethany on a Euro trip when she was 13, which like very chic. So the two of them were like out and about playing in Europe. And I guess Bethany at that point, you know, is 13. So she's cognizant of what her mom is doing. And at a certain point you become aware like, oh, mom's not eating and mom goes to the bathroom for 45 minutes after dinner. Like, I wonder what's going on. So I guess she became like really, like she just like was being like really on top of her mom and following her. And I guess the mom like said she ruined the vacation because, you know, she couldn't do whatever she needed to do in the bathroom after dinner. And I think that definitely has, you know, a lot of what you see your mom doing then is carried on to you, and not all the time, of course, but especially when it comes to food. And she said like her mom's dad used to make comments to her like, women should just obviously like be in the home and cater to their men and like have to be beautiful and have to be thin and have to be this. And so I think that trickled down from Bethany's mom, like Bethany's grandpa, I guess, who I don't think she ever knew. Yeah. But, you know, that explains a lot of, you know, her work and becoming like a national food chef and, you know, really relying on food for her brand. And then obviously like creating like a mega brand called Skinny Girl, which like, you know,
problematic central, but yeah. Also so much money.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then I think we see in later seasons with Jules, who came on and was like very open about having an eating disorder and was obviously still struggling with an eating disorder. And like eating disorders don't like go away overnight. Like just because you could have had help for it and you got out of being in like a really bad place doesn't mean you can't easily slip back into, you know, disordered eating. So I think when Jules came on the scene, Bethany was like, oh my God, finally, I have someone who I can kind of project my food issues onto, because she's literally baking cutlery into a calzone. Like that's like a very, very outward way of showing having eating issues. Whereas Bethany's like a little bit more DL and does like cook really healthy food and does make like gluten-free vegan XYZ muffins. Like no fun in those muffins. I would not want to want
no
to try.
Fun.
No fun muffins.
Although, I mean, what she and Brynn appear to be eating in their Instagram stories, I mean, it seems like they have a lot of fun with food. And it feels like, I mean, as messed up as her mom's relationship with food was, she also credits her mom with sort of like giving her an appreciation for food, which I think is like our relationships with like our family when we're growing up can be great and also fucked up and difficult. And I think that like as much as I feel like the title of this section or this rule itself, breaking the chain, is so cliche, like I think there's like something here, like of all of the rules, I think maybe this is one of the most like resonant or relatable ones, because even if you have a fantastic childhood and like the best parents and no drama, I mean, as you grow up, like you kind of have to figure out what parts of those memories or those routines that you grew up with you want to continue into your own life and which ones you want to sort of like rewrite. And so I do think that like she's hitting on something that a lot of people can relate to. For her, there's a lot of stuff tied up in food. And I think that she thinks I think now maybe she's more over it because this is now written like 10, 11 years ago. But I do sort of feel like she was writing this at a time in her life when maybe she wasn't really like as recovered as she maybe thought she was, because it's still like in every single page of this book. And that kind of makes me sad. Like as somebody who's dealt with like disordered eating on and off throughout her life, like I'm like, it makes me sad that like you wrote this book at a time when you felt like you were like totally through it and had conquered it. And yet like as a reader, it's so painfully obvious to me that like you're struggling, and that's sad. And as you said, it never quite goes away, But I don't know. I feel like she's putting up a pretty, she's talking a big game about food in this book, and I'm not personally buying it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And I think her weight also kind of like ebbs and flows. Like you see her in a bathing suit all the time on the show. And like, sometimes it's like a little bit bony where you're like, honey, what? And I remember right. like right after when Dennis passed away, the photos of her were just so gaunt and thin Scary. And brittle. And yeah. obviously like, you know, people cope with death and loss and trauma in a million different ways, but food can definitely be something that she uses as like, or I guess lack of food as a coping yeah. mechanism. But yeah. yeah, so she talks about her father, Robert Frankel, who was her birth father. He was also a horse trainer. He was Jewish, and Bethany's mom converted to be with him. And she said that her grandfather made such a disgusting comment saying, if you marry this Jewish man, you need to address how your children are going to look. And I was like, that is so disgusting. Like, what yeah. kind of father would say that to their daughter? Jesus. And yeah. good for the daughter for being like, fuck you, I'm gonna still be with him and still have a beautiful child and convert. Fuck you.
Right. Well, I mean, at some point Bethany does, I think it's earlier, but she talks about the fact that like she recognizes that even with her complicated feelings toward her mom, she can see that she like sort of got some really great qualities from her ability to speak out, her ability mm-hmm. to like know her own mind, her hard work ethic. Like, and I think moments like that, as hard as it is to think about a child like Bethany, like being raised in this really inconsistent, just sort of all over the place sort of way, it seems like her mom had some moments of like kind of sticking it to whoever was giving her a hard time and just like forging ahead.
Yeah. And she also said like her mom was like a total people person and was able to like yeah. go into any room and make people laugh. And, you know, people were really attracted to her, which obviously is a quality that Bethany has too. And so, yeah, they definitely, there's good with the bad, but I think even like, as you become an adult, you hope, at least I hope, like, you know, you kind of get over some of the issues of your childhood and slowly but surely. And it's unfortunate because both of her parents seem to take no responsibility for the pain that they put her through. And of course, like they were so, the mom was so young, didn't know what she was doing, was all over the place, was relying on these men who were shady characters and, you know, all over the place and not reliable. But still, like at a certain point, like as a mom, you could say like, hey, I know I really hurt you and that's okay. But when she got famous, her mom spoke to some tabloids and sold all these pictures, these baby pictures of Bethany, and was like, I don't know why she keeps talking about her childhood. It wasn't that bad. She needs to get over it. She's exaggerating. Even that is like, so not only did you sell pictures of me, like you're now banking off of my success, but you can't even call me to say, you know, I'm sorry that those things might have hurt you, or maybe this is why I did X, Y, and Z. Like, it didn't seem like there was ever any acknowledgement of the pain that she put Bethany through.
No. And there was, I remember there being a storyline on Bethany Ever After, maybe, where she was deciding whether or not to call her mom after Bryn was born. And you could just tell how torturous the relationship was. Like, she just, there's just some deep wounds where like she was still looking for her mom's approval and like still wanted to share this very special moment with her mom, but like knew that she wouldn't actually show up in an authentic way. And it was clear again in moments like that, that like, yes, this is a grown woman who is not recovered from things that she's been through as a kid. And it's interesting having seen like those moments sort of very top level on the show to then read the detailed stories. And then, you know, the whole situation with her dad when he passed away, which we sort of saw on Roni as well, when she mm-hmm. went to see him. It is interesting, sort of, if you can read through like the really annoying self-help language, there are tidbits here that if you are like a longtime fan of the show and you are a Bethany apologist like me, it's interesting to like gain those insights and get like the real stories behind them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of fun being able to do that a little bit. And Bethany is she gives us a little bit of information, you know, she's not like super withholding. Like, I don't know if you watched Beverly Hills Housewives, but I have never had any interest in reading Erica Jane's book because I find her to be so cold and unwilling to open up on the show, where you have to think, oh my God, like, what is this book going to be about? Like, if you can't even use your platform you already have and now I'm supposed to read a book. Where Bethany, like always on the show, was very, very open about having a screwed up childhood, having all of these issues, going through, you know, a lot of trials and tribulations to figure out her success. And so that is kind of why I was excited to reread this book. But yeah, again, like reading this in like college or high school, whenever I first read it, I was like, she is a warrior. She's amazing. She's the best life ever. And she's my idol. And now I'm like, well, all right.
You're like, I too am coming from a place of yes.
Yes. I'm like, I followed these 10 rules for the past 10 years of my life. And that is why I have a podcast. So
look at you. You did it. You said yes. And now you're here.
I did it.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you so much. So in the Break the Chain, she then just kind of ends the chapter talking about her stepfather, John Parasella, who was also a horse trainer. The mom met him on the East Coast, and Bethany ended up moving to Queens to live with the two of them. And he was equally as like unstable and all over the place and just unreliable party animal, but he really loved her. And so she always says like she considered him her father. And at one point she changed her last name to Parasella, but then she went back to Frankel. And then like when the stepdad and the mom ended up breaking up again, she was even more alone because I guess the real father wouldn't talk to her, the stepfather wouldn't talk to her, and she had no relationship with her mother. So at that point, it's like she really had nobody.
Yeah, it's super sad. I mean, it's really upsetting. And it does make you wonder too about how the whole custody battle went down. And again, like feels weird to speculate on this, but I feel like she has such an understandably so, she has this very interesting relationship with the child version of herself, who she clearly started to associate with Bryn when Bryn was born. Like there's a lot in this book about like, I couldn't understand how my parents did this to me as soon as I had Bryn, because I looked at her as a baby and I was like, I too was once a baby. And then they treated me in all these crazy ways. And so I think that she really has like projected a lot of her stuff onto her daughter, which, oh, girlfriend, Bryn. I mean, I do think that this is a natural thing. I don't think it's just Bethany. I think this is like the nature of family relationships, which is why we're all constantly works in progress. But it seems to sort of be an extreme version here. And I do wonder how much of that fueled her rage and sort of maybe the ongoing nature of the custody battle. Like who knows what went on behind closed doors, but just because her life was so wild and unpredictable when she was a kid, like I wonder how much of the fight with Jason was about trying to like reclaim something for Bryn.
Definitely. I mean, I think even getting the divorce probably was really difficult for her because she was like breaking up this nuclear family and kind of not necessarily falling into the same patterns as her parents, because obviously like Bethany's a stable human being and like loves her daughter and has given her a beautiful life, as has Jason. But it seems like she definitely was like fighting tooth and nail. And I think it got to a certain point where like it got so litigious between the two of them based on the type of lifestyles they wanted Bryn to live. Like, to be honest, like my cousins go to school with Bryn. And so like, I've seen Jason there like multiple times. I've met his parents, like the parents are always there. Like I can imagine that. I saw Bethany once, which is like very, very cool. I was like, Bethany!
Wearing a sweatsuit. Was she wearing like one of her like matching sweatsuits? And she did was you have the dog?
Wearing no dogs. It was indoors. Okay. She was wearing like, okay, yeah, now what? I'm like, gonna buy the outfit. She's wearing black skinny jeans, like a black wedged sneaker, which I was like, I wasn't gonna buy a pair, but rethinking that. And then she was wearing a gray sweater and then like a black kind of like, I don't know, it's not like a bomber jacket, but it's kind of like, you know, like the motorcycle jackets with like the shearling fleece on the inside. And that was black. It was very cute. She looks very, very good.
I mean, she pretty much always does, even when she says she looks bad. Okay. So I hear all that. The Jason is actually from a town, like not super far from where I grew up. And so one of the things that I actually really enjoyed about like watching their dynamic was I feel like I sort of got him in a way. Like his parents were like very recognizable to me just as like old people who like lived near where I lived when I was a kid, and like their sensibilities, while I don't agree with them necessarily, like were very familiar to me. And so I sort of loved the humor, especially as somebody who had like moved to New York from that place. I sort of loved the humor of like watching them bounce off of each other because they were so different. But yeah, I mean, that just was never meant to be. I don't have a point there other than the fact that I was fascinated by the Hoppies. And also, I never had a Bethany sighting. I never had a Jason sighting. And this is a deep cut. Like, I don't know that, maybe you'll know this. So did you watch Bethany Getting Married and Bethany Ever After?
I haven't watched it since it originally aired.
Okay. That's okay. But do you remember, so she hired that assistant, Max, who was terrible.
Was he the hot one or like the scruffy guy?
He was hot.
Oh yeah, I remember
like,
the hot one.
He was like pretty. I saw him once in New York. And that was the closest I've ever gotten to Bethany. And he looked like rough. I'm pretty sure that they had like a bad parting. Like, I think he, I don't quite remember, but I feel like he really fucked some stuff up and it didn't end well. And I saw him and he looked so messy. And I had this whole narrative in my head about like, wow, like things have really fallen apart for him since he disappointed Bethany. But anyway, that was a very long digression and I had to share it with somebody who would care.
Probably well, life, else. Life after Bethany is, it's really ugly. Yeah,
it is. It really is. I hope Julie's okay. Wherever Julie is, her
she has like a family and kids. I feel like she got completely, I've like followed her. I saw she was a guest on somebody's podcast. So then I followed her and she just has like a normal life. I feel like she was like, I don't need any of this mess in my life. Mm. But when I was reading this book, I did find out that Julie is Bryn's godmother, which like, is sweet in one way, but also like deeply sad where it's like, you have no one else in your life that you decided to make your assistant who is no longer your assistant and probably not in your life anymore, your child's godmother. I just thought that was strange. Yeah.
Well, also speaking of that, and I don't think we're now in like the proper chronology of the book. I'm sorry. I'm
totally. Oh yeah. No, we're jumping around, but we are moving into Find Your Truth, which is all about dating. Find your truth. Is perfect. But again, like Find Your Truth. Why is your truth about dating?
Her truth is about dating and men. But I also, on the point of Julie and Julie being her godmother, I wanted to make sure I mentioned the scene with Gina, the baby nurse, and the baptism, and how I read this totally different now in 2020. And again, having watched the scene like on TV more times than I'd like to admit as the proud owner at one time of these seasons, when I look back at that now and I remember being very like, very concerned and sort of very on Bethany's side about that. Cause yeah, like these strange people that you don't know are taking your baby and it's this religious ceremony and it makes you very uncomfortable, like valid. Yes. But in hindsight, at least the way I can visualize it from having seen the show, it's like a very racial thing, which is not really mentioned in the book. And I thought that was sort of interesting that she talks around the fact that Gina was Black and they went into a Black church and they were the only white people at the church when this happened. And I think, with all of the conversations that we're having in 2020 and the ways that we're trying to be a little bit more direct and like take on these conversations head on and just sort of like call out the bullshit when we see it. Like this is a situation where Bethany is like not saying that like she felt uncomfortable in a room full of Black people. And like, that's sort of the end of the story. So that for me was like an interesting nugget and like an interesting like personal evolution maybe in coming back to this book a couple of years after I both read it and then a couple of years after I watched the scene actually play out on TV.
Completely. And I think so many white people really never consider themselves in situ or find themselves in situations with predominantly Black people. And then, yeah, all of a sudden the woman who basically is raising your child is now a threat to you. And like her other parishioners are like gonna harm your child when it's like, no, this was like a beautiful thing that Gina wanted to do for the family. And also Jason is a Catholic and goes to church every Sunday. And they said, which actually, by the way, this is in perfectly chronological order. Thank you very much. In Find Your Truth.
You're welcome.
But the mom, Jason's family goes to church every day. So it's not like he's unfamiliar with, you know, the rituals of going to a church and they're like, oh shit, they're going to baptize her. It's like, Bethany, no one's baptizing your child without you knowing. Like, I wouldn't worry about that. And even like put some water on the baby's head. Like it's not like written in stone that your kid's baptized. Like I think you're okay.
But yeah, it was definitely a weird scene to read now.
Most definitely. So in this section, she initially says, you know, Jason doesn't want to hear about this. So skip over this part, which I have a sick feeling Jason did not read this book. but
I hope he didn't. Yeah. I hope. Well,
it could have been the catalyst for a lot of like his desires to get the hell out, because she was very passive aggressive towards him and his family and his ideas of family and his career, even the way she was talking about like his money situation towards later chapters. Yeah. I just had like, come on, honey. Like, he is your man. Like, obviously you make a lot of money, and you don't think he is very well aware that he doesn't provide for the family in the exact same way as you. And like, some men are incredibly insecure. Well, a lot of men are very insecure about that. So you don't need to keep reminding us that, you know, you're the main breadwinner of this family.
Right. You're rich. It's great. Like, you're but rich. The whole thing about like, one of their first dates, she told this story about how she wanted him to pay for the cab and he didn't, because he like knew, I guess, that she had a lot of money. It just felt super weird. It felt like she wanted to, I feel like I'm getting away from my apologist standpoint here, which is making me a little uncomfortable, but it felt like she wanted to make it clear that readers knew that like she made a lot of money and like that was an important part of the story, but also that like she, I don't know, it felt like she just was playing it on all kinds of directions. Like, she wanted us to know that she made a lot of money. She wanted us to know that she wanted to be treated like a lady. She wanted us to know that she also was like a feminist and open to having the conversation about it. It was just weird. And I would imagine that like their financial, the difference in their financial situations did not help even before the nasty divorce. Like, I'm sure that that played a big role in why things didn't work out. And you can see it in this book because it's just very awkward.
Absolutely. And like in later chapters, they end up talking about how she's like, at this point, Jason is so involved in our business, I'm going to get him involved in contracting and accounting for my company. And I'm like, oh, so you're going to put him even further into involvement in your money? Like, no. And why do you think he like, you know, raked you over the coals during your divorce? Because he was like, well, I know how much she's making, I've negotiated some of those contracts, so let's make this real hard for you, which obviously is not a admirable thing for a man to do. But I don't know, I think they must have been really petty. We see Bethany on the show, like, she can get so mean, so heated off of basically nothing, generally most of the time, like, not even provoked. And I can't imagine having to deal with that kind of, you know, attitude during a divorce proceedings and having a baby and being on television and being in the limelight. Like, obviously, you know, you can't point your finger at anybody in a relationship like, oh, you're the reason for the divorce. But I can imagine it was ugly in that house for a very long time.
It all just happened very fast between the two of them too. Like, I think that was sort of how I remember feeling watching the show. It just was very quick. And so they had a lot to catch up on. Like, I think they talked about openly, like, we're getting to know each other, like, as we are like starting a family. And that's a really big thing for anybody to do, especially if, like you said, you have all these other pressures, you're in the public eye, there's money involved, like, forget it. Like, that sounds really hard.
Well, yeah, they were like dating, she gets pregnant, they get married really quickly, which I can even imagine that being like his family pressuring him, like, okay, you need to get married to this woman. Like, she's going to be your wife. Like, let's do it the proper way. And
yet they never really liked her. Like, they were pushing him to do that, but like, they clearly never liked her. Yeah. So he must have been in a bad, it was bad. It was bad. And that's what makes it so hard to read this book, because it feels like she was trying to make it all okay. And I do think that's our tendency sometimes as women anyway. Like, how do I fix this? How do I make the optics of it okay? Like, how do I present it in a better light? How do I make it okay for everyone else? And it does feel like that's sort of what's going on in the book. And I wonder if there was some like subconscious effort there to like make it all happy.
But like, even Bethany trying to do like a make good in a book, like, still kind of comes off as aggressive. It's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, you tried, but
you're,
I guess,
not wrong.
Yeah. So when she was 26, she ended up marrying a guy named Peter. They were married for a little bit of time. He was really loaded, so she ended up quitting her job, her dream of being an actress, gets a day job at an event planning firm. And then after some time of being with him, she realized she was not sexually attracted to him, which, yeah, like, is the nail in the coffin. And then she said from there, when she started realizing that she wasn't attracted to him, she didn't want to be married to him, that's when she first acknowledged in the book of having some sort of eating disorder, which, you know, then obviously you see in many different iterations throughout the book. But it kind of proved to her that a good man will love her and that she could find a man, she could be stable. And she made a lot of different points throughout this book saying, oh, you know, I wanted to get married before I was 30. That was so important to me. That's so important to me. You know, at the time, like, I thought that was the only thing that mattered, getting married before 30. And then she's like, and then I did it. I get everything I want. And then I look back at my life and I'm like, wait, like, I'm completely unfulfilled. I'm not following my dreams anymore. I'm playing this housewife role when that's not really serving me anything. And so she ends up getting out of that marriage and then immediately jumps into another relationship with Peter's family friend, Larry. And they got together right after the breakup and it was a huge scandal causing their families to not be friends anymore. And they're still not friends anymore.
Drama.
Drama. And like, in a way, like, I think Bethany thrives on drama. I think she grew up in chaos. And so by default, her natural inclination in relationships is probably to like throw a grenade and see what happens. Because I guess if things are like too stable, she's like, this is boring. This is not what I want. Like, this is not what I know. And that's a comfort, even if that comfort is chaos. And so yeah, she dated Larry. They were super passionate. And then obviously that passion fizzled. As it does.
Womp womp. Womp womp.
And then from there, she dates Jimmy, who's her high school boyfriend, and he was based in Chicago. I guess he was really good on paper and not necessarily good for her, but he convinced her to leave Los Angeles, where she was working at the event planning firm, and move to Chicago. And they lived there together, and she realized she really wasn't happy. Which is very Tinsley-esque, getting swept away to Chicago, which as I was thinking, I was like, I wonder if maybe that's why Bethany was so like, well, why would he gonna move to Chicago for this guy? It's like, oh, speaking from experience.
History repeats itself.
And so from there, she was like, okay, if we're gonna be together, at least let's try to live in New York City together. They moved to New York City together. He absolutely hates it. She kind of says in the book that she orchestrated this move so that they would have an excuse to break up because he was like a good guy. He wasn't going to dump her, especially because they were like living together at that point. She had moved for him, so he was going to move for her. That obviously didn't work out. But when she was in Chicago, she caught Cookie the dog. So she said that relationship was definitely worth it because she got Cookie to boo-boo.
Rest in peace.
R.I.P. I didn't see those like Instagram stories where she like literally filmed Cookie's death.
Oh yeah, that was dark. That was not fun for anyone.
Yeah, and she's like chronic influencer with like so many little dots on the top of her Instagram stories, where it must have been one of those days where I was like, fuck, Bethany, what are you doing that could be so interesting? And I swiped, and then like 2 days later it was like, she did this on Instagram. And I'm like, my fucked up brain wish I saw it in real time just to like be a part of it. But then also I'm like, what the fuck is my problem?
I go through phases with her Instagram story. Like I'll go like weeks and weeks, sometimes months, and not watch any of them. And then like recently, I think it's since she started like showing Bryn and like showing their relationship more, I like can't get enough.
Yeah. Well, I guess after a certain point, maybe it was agreed upon that Bryn could be on social media with her, because in the beginning she was just putting like emojis on her face, which felt really weird. Sad. I'm like, what are you gonna like, your kid goes on your Instagram, she probably has access to all of this stuff, and just was like, oh, look at me with a bow on my face, like, great, that's
yeah,
that's me.
There I am. Yeah, I think it started on her birthday. Like it seemed like maybe they had made a deal that she was like allowed to be on her birthday, and then maybe she like appealed it, and it seems like it's sort of like always allowed now.
Also on a certain level, like people could easily see her face through paparazzi photos, which like isn't as prevalent anymore. Obviously like we're stuck inside. So Bryn's like not going to school, because they would always catch her like outside of school getting picked up, which poor little girl, she's just trying to leave school and she's like bombarded with paparazzi.
Yeah. I mean, she also looks just like Jason anyway. She's like, do you really need to have a photo? Like everybody knows who she is. Like leave her alone.
Yeah. We don't need that. So after she breaks up with Jimmy, she goes back with Larry. She was going to move to LA to be with him. She did move to LA to be with him. She obviously ends up dumping him again. And from there, she's single for 3 years, moves back to New York. Thank God. And meets Kevin, who's a rock and roll photographer, who sounded really hot. Like I couldn't find a photo of him, but I'm like, who is Kevin? He's a single dad. He is a rock and roll photographer. He took her to see Billy Joel play piano in the Roman Colosseum. I'm like, that place has concerts.
Yeah, I'm like very into Kevin. Me like too. married, but very into Kevin also.
Yes, I'm definitely all about Kevin, but obviously they didn't end up together because he had kids before and she didn't really want to take the role of the stepmom and also knew she wanted to have her own children and he didn't want to have any more kids. So that was done. Wait,
that's another Tinsley parallel.
Interesting.
Wasn't her most, like before she went back to Scott, like Bruce or whoever she was dating, like at the boxing gym with Leah, Bruce. Yeah. That was the thing that she kept saying was like, there's too many other people competing for his attention. Maybe Bethany just like felt like Tinsley was her.
Well, I feel like Dorinda kind of feels like Tinsley is her. Yeah, you know, I think they all kind of looked at her and they're like, wait. So you can have a very checkered past of like abuse and mugshots and still end up with like, I don't want to say a great guy, but like a decent man, like who clearly loves you and, you know, is loaded and
coupon, you know, cabin.
He's the coupon king. I bet he's getting her tons of discounted diamonds and tulle dresses.
He built her a closet, okay? So haters, just relax.
Oh, I know. I think I am a hater because that's great. It's like very Sex in the City. So from there, she goes into dating first Jason, who we see on the first season, I think, only the first season of Roni, where she's like, Jason, will you live with me? And he's like, no. And he also
major
had
grouch.
Kids.
Like big grouch energy.
And he didn't want to be on the show. He told her basically like, this isn't going to be good for you. You shouldn't use the show as your therapy. Like, this isn't good. I don't want to be involved. So she should have realized at that point, like, if this guy can't even like smile at a dinner that you're making for him, like he's not the one. If he's not saying thank you after dinner, hard
no. Bye.
Bye. And so from there, whatever, dates a lot of other randos and then meets the one, the only Jason Hoppy at age 39. They meet at a nightclub. And the first thing he says to her was, are you ready to get that stick out of your ass now? Hmm. So romance is not dead, people.
There's a lot there. Like we could go in on that. There's a lot going on under that pickup line, under the fact that she responded so well to it.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mm-hmm. That was weird where she was like, and when he said that, I knew he was the perfect man for me. I'm like, oh wow, so verbally abusive from the jump.
Yeah, she's like, get in my pants. Yeah.
Yeah, get in my Hervé Leger dress.
Get in this bandage dress now.
Oh my god. So yeah, so then obviously their relationship is like very fast and furiously happening, babies, wedding, all of that. She basically said, yeah, in this section, like financial independence was super important to her. And obviously that money plays a big role in relationships. And yeah, she was saying she like wanted him to pick up some of the tabs and she would pick up some of the tabs. And then when she would pick up the tab, he'd get upset or she'd get, it's like, well, you can also like be in a relationship, be a feminist, allow your partner to pay for you. And then also be like, okay, hon, dinner on me. Okay. Movies on me. Like there is a balance, of course. Like it's nice to be wined and dined in the beginning, but I don't know, I think it's like a little antiquated to assume like, oh, now this man has to pay for every single thing that we do together. Like that's a lot of money. It's expensive to date in New York.
Yeah, I mean, I think that generally with her, she feels like she has to sort of declare herself at one extreme or another in kind of every case. Like, she's all about sort of, not to be a Lisa Rinna, but she's all about owning it, like in some extreme. So I feel like she either felt like she had to declare herself as like the badass businesswoman who was going to pay for everything, or she has to be somebody who is taking care of. Like, I don't know that her mind necessarily works in shades of gray, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And just reading this book gives you an idea of the fact that like she's very into declaring herself, and like, I don't know, I think that that's very much a part of who she is. And maybe it's because she like didn't feel like she was seen or understood as a kid. But to me, it just felt like with the money and relationship stuff, it had to be super black and white. And she just like wasn't prepared to find a middle somewhere.
And I think it was interesting because she also opened up in the beginning when she was talking about her mom, how her mom was always saying to her, you know, Bethany, you need to make your own money. You can't rely on a man. You can't rely on a man. And then she does make her own money. And then she's still like relying on a man for very, you know, basic things. And again, like I get the courting period. Even my mom would be like, you bought this guy what? And I'm like, two drinks each. Like,
right.
I didn't break the bank. Like he bought a $250 dinner. Like I think I could pick up a $60 tab. Like if I'm having fun, if I don't like the guy,
bye.
My money's not going anywhere near mm-hmm. that bill.
No, thanks.
So then we move to rule 3, act on it, which again is just a whole bunch of nothing. Taking positive control of your life and taking real tangible steps towards your goal. She basically talks about going to NYU, being a PA on Saved by the Bell, where she met Denise Richards, which I love any sort of other housewife being mentioned in. Well, I guess it's a past housewife.
Former. Yeah, a little crossover moment.
Little crossover. She talks about life in Los Angeles, said her eating disorder got worse because casting agents were telling her she needed to lose more weight. From there, she was in a soap opera and had a topless scene. She said that was a super decision. And obviously, Ramona ends up bringing it up to her at that one thing where she was like, you were topless on a waterbed.
In the Hamptons, like, they weren't they like at a party when this conversation? Yeah, they were in the Hamptons at a restaurant or something when this all started. Classic Ramona.
Classic. She is trash. She also talks about being a waitress at La Scala restaurant, which is like this bougie place in Los Angeles. And she ended up meeting Kathy Hilton there and ends up becoming her personal assistant, which is how she knows Paris and Nikki Hilton, thus knowing Kyle Richards, to bring it even more back to the Beverly Hills lady. Yeah, that's pretty much it on Act On It. That's like, but yeah, even that,
lame.
Like, kind of lame. She did do one little section where it was like, eating in college 101. Tons of young girls asked me. She's like, handful of nuts. Eat a burger with half of the bun, no cheese. Cut back on your portion size. Eat hummus with carrots. I'm like, oh my God. When I was in college, I was like having Ben and Jerry eating contests where I'd be like, okay, who can eat this pint faster? Like, weight was, I mean, I went to like basically an all-girls college. There was like 8 dudes there. But it was like thinking about my weight was like the last thing until like, you know, like most girls. Yeah, once I like started like, I mean, I went to school in Manhattan. So it was like once you start going clubbing and you're like, oh, whoa, like, I was a 9 out on Long Island growing up.
You're like, now I have to wear a bandage dress. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah, I'm like, Mom, should I get Spanx? And she's like, you're 18. You don't have anything on your body. I'm like, well, I also attempt to go to clubs near models. I attempt to go.
I try. But also, Bethany's like tips are not that interesting. Again, like, I'm not trying to come at her like Kelly and say that she's a cook, because I do believe that she knows her stuff. But this like section was so misplaced in this book. It just didn't make any sense. It made me like angry because I was like, was this her idea? Did one of her publicists suggest this? Who knows where this came from? And also I'm like, these tips are very basic for probably like your target demographic of readers, aka like women, many of whom are also dealing with their own weight stuff. The idea of eating carrots and hummus or a burger without a bun is like not new to them. So I was just like, this feels weird. I didn't like it at all.
Yeah, definitely not revolutionary diet tips. Definitely not.
Also, I thought she wasn't into dieting anymore. Like you can't, I like that she says that these things are all like not dieting tips, but they are. And like, just say what it is, please.
And like, it's okay to diet. Like, of course, if you're doing it within reason and you're being healthy. I don't know if you've been following the Teddy Mellencamp drama with like her whole big expose thing. I'm so excited to talk about it on like my, this show has like bonus episodes, which is this, and then news episodes, and I'm recording the news one on Wednesday, and I cannot wait to go all in on Teddy Mellencamp.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to listen. I have not been as into Beverly Hills lately since like last season's fiasco, but I am very interested in all things Teddy.
Yeah, it should be definitely interesting how this pans out. Today they were all saying she's going to be off the show. They're going to kick her off. And I'm like, Bravo is so weird with who they decide to kick off the show for wrongdoing. It's like, okay, so tons of people could be problematic for decades, but Teddy is just, you know, being an ignorant anorexia pusher and she's got to go. I'm like, I don't know.
They're also all ignorant anorexia pushers. Like,
true.
Thin and hot, and like, I don't know. I think people have had it out for Teddy from the beginning. So I think that's really what's going on here.
It's basically just a matter of time. I mean, she'll probably like bow out herself at this point.
Probably.
So we move to the rule number four, which again is just doesn't make any sense. Everything's your business. So this is basically how she has found her way as an entrepreneur and talking about all the little odd jobs she had where she became super successful and how they all kind of created her, you know, business vision. She did go on one very long rant about the Pashminas.
Oh, yes.
Oh, the Pashmina. Yeah. So Princess Pashmina was a...
It sounds so funny when you say it out loud.
Well, are you kidding? I like listened to this on the audiobook and she said it so many times. I was like, I feel like I'm just listening to this on a loop. Like I never want to hear this phrase ever again.
It's a funny phrase.
So I guess she was on the internet and she saw a Pashmina that she wanted that was like $500. She's like, what the hell? Why can't I find a Pashmina for cheaper? So then she went on this website, like Alibaba.com, and found 50 Pashminas and bought them for $3,400 and thought, okay, I'm going to make this into like a side hustle business. So Bethany, business mogul, ends up selling all of these Pashminas, keeps ordering more of them, starts hosting Pashmina parties. She's basically Mary Kay. She's going
the Tupperware lady of Pashmina.
She's selling them in like Los Angeles, Japan, Paris, New York. And like Pashminas can be purchased on the street of Manhattan for $4. Like you can get a Pashmina everywhere. And so she said she like started the Pashmina trend. And now obviously you can find them all over, but she's like, before my Princess Pashmina, you couldn't find a Pashmina this side of the, like on this hemisphere, like I've done this big thing. And then she ends up taking all the money that she made on this business, which she ends up putting it online. She ends up investing all of the money that she's made into some other company that a friend told her to invest in. And she lost all of her money.
Oh no, not in Pashminas. Also, I have never heard anybody use the Pashmina, the word Pashmina, so many times outside of this book that you like you pulled it off so well. It doesn't really roll off the tongue.
No, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like before this I had to do like vocal practice and I was like Princess Pashmina, Princess Pashmina, Princess Pashmina. Then we go to five. All roads lead to Rome.
Dumb title.
So this is talking
Love you, Bethany, but dumb.
This is how, as long as you are working hard and working on your truth, then everything you want in life will eventually happen. So this is how she discovers that she wants to be a chef. So she quits the job. Jimmy is supporting her, moves to Chicago, then moves back to New York and ends up going to the Natural Gourmet Institute, which a friend of mine went to. And I actually took a knife skills class there. And that place was really great. But they unfortunately shut down.
Oh, sad.
So from there, she ended up working at like a vegan catering company. And then they shut down, but it kind of gave her the inspiration to start her own cookie and muffin line with no wheat, egg, or dairy.
Delicious.
So good. There's nothing I'd want to eat more than any of them. And even like I've tried to do like the gluten-free, dairy-free, you know, banana loaf or whatever. And every time I do it, I'm like, oh God, you know what this would taste great with? Flour and eggs, like that would make this cake so much better.
Yeah, I feel like you can eliminate like one of those items and it can be good, but you can't do it all.
Yeah, totally. So at this point she was making about 400 cookies a day. She was driving around in her little skinny girl car, never forget, and she was trying to sell them to bodegas all around the city, trying to get them into stores. And I will never forget that one scene. I think it was season one where she was like, she had the name Skinny Girl and she was doing it. I don't know if it was called Skinny Girl then, but she was like in that empty grocery store and she was like, anyone want to try a muffin? No, no. You could hear a muffin drop in here. Like, I'll never forget.
Classic.
Classic.
Classic. Yeah. And also the Skinny Girl car driving up to have drinks with Luann after they're falling out and they're like an empty bar in the Hamptons. And she looks so funny in that car.
Luann was like, are you seriously driving this car? And she's like, yeah, honey, I'm a branding maven. Like, this is, this is what you gotta do. And she's honestly not wrong, but it takes some guts.
Yeah, well, now Luann has like rosary candles with her face on them. So, like, she's really in no position to judge. I don't even know if that's, are they called rosary candles? That's what they seem
they're,
like.
Yeah, I think they're prayer candles. I actually prayer own candles. One with Andy's face on it. So, I'm a victim to the cute Instagram purchases.
I love it.
So from there, she then goes into another really long story about selling a 5-carat engagement ring. So in one of her engagements, a guy gave her a 5-carat ring. And so she's like, okay, I'm going to try to sell this. She like, I guess, sells it on this website and ends up selling the ring to this person who like then doesn't pay her and whatever. This is like a 7-page arc where it's like literally no one asks or cares. So she ends up like finding this guy to be this big scammer. She goes and knocks on his door and finds the ring. Then she calls the cops. The cops go because they were selling these rings in multiple states. The FBI got involved and she ended up getting $30,000 for that ring eventually. So not bad, but
I mean, not bad. And you know why that story is important, Megan? Because she made it her business, okay?
Because all roads lead to Rome.
And all roads lead to Rome, and all roads lead to being rich and break the chain.
Right. Well, this leads us perfectly into 6. Go for yours.
What? Go for yours. Go also, Megan, go for yours.
Go for yours. 7 is really good too. Just teaser, guys, separate from the pack, which at least that one's a little bit better, but go for yours. Go for yours is all about her stint on Martha Stewart Apprentice, which I did find the episodes on YouTube, and I think I'm gonna have to do a recap on this show of the entire series because
can I come back? I watched a little bit and I was like, I might be committed.
This is kind of perfect. I feel like every time you come on the show now, it's just going to be like another deep dive into Bethany, and it's like we're gonna actually kind of become like experts, I think.
I will be your Bethany correspondent.
Thank you. So she ends up getting a tip from someone at a restaurant that Martha Stewart is casting for the show. She does the whole casting process. She buys a Moschino outfit, gets her hair done, does all of this stuff, goes on tape, gets taped at like a trade fair selling her cardboard muffins. And they really like her. They bring her in. Again, this was like when Trump was still like just a business mogul and not the president.
Other content that aged in a very interesting way. Like super weird to read all of this stuff about Trump how she like wanted to be on his show because she was so into him and like he was just a reality star.
So yeah, initially it was like she was going to be trying to get onto The Apprentice and then she went through the whole process. They end up passing on her. And then a couple months later, they call her and they actually said, hey, you know, we were saving you for Martha Stewart's Apprentice that we had in like the, you know, pre-production phase. And we want you to come back for that. So she goes through all of the process to get involved in that again, does the videos, gets selected. Great. And she was obviously so excited because she's like, Martha Stewart is one of my, you know, icons. And I look up to her, especially in this space. We do a lot of similar work. And she basically said like the show was like torture for her. She had to work constantly. She thought she was like going to be Martha's successor, but Martha like actually had just no interest in her and was like, you don't fit in here. Like your vibe is very not Martha Stewart. Like pick up one issue of Martha Stewart Living and nothing would like resonate with Bethany in my eyes. And that's actually my third favorite magazine. I still read magazines, but I work for New York Magazine. So it's like, It's my thing. I love magazines.
Well, New York Magazine is my favorite magazine. And I'm not just saying that because you work for New York Magazine.
Wow. We love to hear it, you guys. Get yourself a subscription. It's aggressively cheap online.
Support print journalism, everyone.
Right. And they have the best crossword puzzles in the back. Oh my God. Seriously. I love their crossword puzzles so much. Ugh.
I can actually, it's like a perfect balance between like, I can do it, but it still makes me feel like I'm challenged.
That's exactly why I enjoy doing it, because there's also like entertainment, little tidbits. Mm-hmm. There's things about traveling and food, where sometimes I've tried to do the New York Times one and I'm just so reminded that like, I did like really poorly on my SATs and I'm like, oh my God, like I know nothing. Like I don't know a single thing, but New York Mags really is like, yeah, that fine line between challenging and like, I'm almost done with this. This is cool.
Yeah, totally. Well, support journalism, everyone, please. Speaking as two journalists, right. Working for media.
So yeah, so basically she didn't end up having a good time on Martha Stewart. She didn't win, but she was runner up, which I mean, pretty great. Gotta give her credit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that happens. And then we get to seven, separate from the pack. And this talks about her life as a real housewife, which like, thank God, honey, because 9 and 10 are so boring. We have to wait until 7 and 8 to like get into a little bit of the info. Actually, it's really just 7 that I cared about, which is all about.
I thought the apprentice stuff was like interesting, at least. Like, I mean, I like all the behind the scenes stuff, but yes, I mean, we really got what we were looking for in Separate from the Pack.
So she talks about how she went to a polo party in the Hamptons with Jason number one. And there she saw Jill Zarin. And this is when she does like the Zarin voice being like, hey, skinny, how'd you get in the VIP area? And then obviously that's like what Jill was asking, which is not surprising at all. So Bethany then was talking with Jill and Jill was telling her about Manhattan Moms, which was the name of Roni before Roni became a thing. And she was talking about how she was filming it, and Bobby actually ended up going over to the producers and saying, hey, you guys should talk to Bethany. They talked to Bethany, they really click. And obviously Bethany like wasn't married, wasn't engaged, didn't have any children, but you know, was on the other side of wanting to be a Manhattan mom. So I guess it kind of fit. And then by the time the show ended up getting fully greenlit, it ended up being the second installment of the Real Housewives franchise after OC. And she became a Real Housewife. And yeah, she wasn't a housewife either. But, you know, I kind of like that they kind of brought her on as like someone who wanted to be a housewife. It kind of was just definitely a juxtaposition between like Lou and Jill and Ramona. Right. Oh, my God. And Alex. Well,
Alex. Well, and for some reason, I don't know why I decided to do this, but I am down like an RHOC rabbit hole currently, like watching the whole thing. So I'm on season, I want to say 4. And they had kind of done that too, like season one, Joe De La Rosa, these are deep cuts people.
Oh,
she was on and those seasons are so good. Like early OC is the best. And Joe was on and she's not married. And then they brought Gretchen on. So like, this was a thing they were doing, but I think there was something about Bethany. Like she was even more different. She sort of was like separating herself from the pack, dare I say, more so than maybe like a Joe or a Gretchen, even though they also like weren't technically married when they were on the show.
Yeah. And she said like, because she was different from the other ladies, it was actually a pro for her because viewers were like looking at, you know, Jill's, I mean, tacky apartment, but like a big, beautiful Park Avenue apartment and Luann's gorgeous townhouse and all of these women with all of this money and family. And, you know, you see that kind of side of life. And then you're like, no, like this is also like a very normal woman in Manhattan, scrappy, living alone in a one bedroom, has a boyfriend. It's not clearly they're not like, they don't have the chemistry that she's looking for. And I think that actually made people think of her as the underdog a little bit. And then obviously if you see like future seasons and she brings it up in the book, the conversation with Ramona on the bridge, which like I was on the Brooklyn Bridge like a couple weeks ago. And like, that was all I thought about. I'm like, not like looking at like the beautiful architecture or the view. I was like, wow, this is the very bridge that like that fucked Bethany up.
That was rough.
Yeah. That was not cool of Ramona. I mean, a lot of the things she said probably like triggered Bethany back to like her childhood or to like what things her mom has probably said to her. And I can imagine that like left lasting damage, obviously, because it was horrible.
Agreed.
So from there, she talks about season one. She talks about how she kind of had to manage her booze on the show because she didn't want to be seen as a drunk. Like, because how could someone who makes vegan cookies also be drinking tequila? She said she, one thing that like was like reminded me of the Pashmina moment, and I promise I wouldn't say Pashmina again this episode, but here I am. But she was saying how she like went to some reality show, fashion shows, launch party or premiere party, which I think it was for the Rachel Zoe project because that was out in 2008. But she was saying she was at this like big fashion party and she wore this knockoff Hervé Leger dress. And I guess Posh Spice, whose name is Victoria Beckham, which I wrote her name as Posh Spice in my notes. Victoria Beckham and her were wearing the same dress. And then Us Weekly or whatever put her in a like who wore it better poll. And Bethany ended up winning. And Bethany, the little business mogul, just going for hers and all roads lead to Rome. She ended up buying all of the dresses of that exact style that she could find online and then sold them all on eBay and ended up making $4,000 in profit.
I mean, I would not even think to do any of these things. So like, I guess she is who she is and she separates herself from the pack and she goes for hers.
I just, and then we go to 8. Because she also owns it, which, yeah, she's the original owning it. Like, Lisa Rinna is shaking in her, I was going to say boots, but I feel like she's probably just, like, dancing naked somewhere right now, shaking in her skin.
In her, like, or, like, Uggs. I feel like she, like, is naked in Uggs, maybe.
Yeah, she's definitely, like, always outside, like, near Harry Hamlin while he's gardening, and she's just, like, in Uggs. It's very, very chic.
I fucking love them.
Yeah, I like their relationship together, but I think Lisa Rinna this season has been just like very annoying to me where I'm like, too spicy. Like, you need to cool down a little bit, like too much. Yeah. So owning it is all about copping to what you've said and what you've done. This is where she talks about her mom selling her pictures to the press and then basically saying like, that's what you get, blah, 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 for talking about me. I'll say my own part in this narrative. Let's see. And then this is when she kind of starts talking about Bethany getting married and Bethany, well, she talks about the question mark in the title because I guess she was obviously very scared about getting married. She didn't know if it was she was going to go through with it. She said at one point, she was like, I didn't want to disappoint my fans by breaking up with him because what were they just going to say? Oh, wow, Bethany, you threw away the greatest man in the world. You got rid of this the best man in the world just because you're scared. Like, damn. Like, you give a fuck what your fans think that badly, which I guess like breaking up with him means like not getting the show and not getting the spinoff and having those opportunities, which she was talking about how after during season two, no, it was the beginning of season three of Roni, everybody knew that she was getting a spinoff and it was like the elephant in the room and none of them spoke about it, which obviously it was because they all were probably like, wait, why did the hell does she get a spinoff? Like, what does she do that's so great? Where it's like, well, she's starting like a whole new life. And granted, like it would kind of make sense for her to stay on Roni because now she is a quote real housewife, but they were all kind of butthurt about that. But yeah, she basically was saying like, she told Jason at one point, she was like 88% sure that she wanted to marry him. And it like broke his heart.
He's like, I remember that from the show.
Lit like 88%.
It's a very specific number.
I feel like she is like has quantified it in some way. Like she has like some sort of like algorithm where she is like sexual feelings, this amount, financial stability, this amount, family values, this amount, and then she got to 88%.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And it was sad. She said the wedding that they had was really beautiful at the Four Seasons and RIP, that room no longer exists, which is really sad. Mm-hmm. But she was saying how she like had no family at the wedding, which of course like her family situation is really gnarly, but it's still really sad to think like, wow, not a single member of your family's here.
Yeah, it was really sad.
Oh, poor girl. Then baby Bryn comes. She came 5 weeks early. She said her and Jason had both never changed a diaper before. So they both had like truly no idea what they were doing. And how do you go 40 years in your life without once ever changing a diaper? I guess, I don't know.
I believe it more for her, but I feel like he must have had like cousins. I feel like he just was from like a huge family and somebody's diaper needed to be changed at some point. I believe that she was never in a position to change a diaper. That like totally tracks for me.
Yeah, true. Very, very true. And then, yeah, I'm telling you, like, once it gets to like 8, 9, and 10, it's like, okay, 8, 9, come together. Rule number 9, come together, which is basically her saying, like, you need to cooperate and ask for help. Holidays are really stressful. You need to come together, which is basically her being like, look, people, you can get together with your friends and family and it's great. It's like, no, we all know that. Like, that's very obvious.
Right. She's like, you should learn to like try to get along with your in-laws. Like, that's sort of how it works.
At one point,
it's nice to be nice.
Also, like, to people who like watch your child, like who, you know, raise your husband. Like, I don't know. I obviously I'm not in a place where I'm like getting married, and so I don't know like in-law drama. And I know obviously so many people have in-law drama, but at a certain point, it's like, just like, this is them, like this is who they are, and you I think just kind of have to like adjust a little bit and even be able to like check your husband and say like, hey, like you need to stand up for me if they're crossing a line or whatever. But it seems like he wouldn't really budge on like his family values and his devotion to his family, which I think she might have been like, okay, like let's start our own little family, like we don't need them, like we have each other. And it's like, well, no, like a beautiful, obviously families are different and come in all different shapes and sizes, but like when the whole family comes to love your kid and love the family, like that is what makes a big beautiful family. Like, you know, of course you can have 3 people and have a great little family, but you know, it's the extended family, the cousins, the grandparents, all of those people are what make like, you know, a big whole family. So
I think she just wanted to be stuck in what she knew, you know. And I think her narrative has always been very much about struggle and overcoming adversity and being resilient and sort of like doing things alone and not needing others. And I don't know, there's a whole like theory in therapy where like once you change your narrative and you make it more positive and you can like accept good news or like progress in your life, then what you sort of have to remove some crutches and like you can't talk about like the same struggles anymore, and it can't be about your grief and it can't be about your resilience, because it's like, oh no, things are good now. And that's like a real thing. And people, you know, I've heard people talk about it with chronic pain too. Like if you're in pain forever and then all of a sudden you are on the brink of maybe not being in pain anymore, it's scary, because then you're like, okay, who am I without being the person who is like my hand hurts, you know? So no, I feel like that's a little bit of where she's coming from. And also like, I just think she's so independent and I don't know, but she was out of control. Like watching it all unfold on the show, it really did make me sad for his family, because like his shitty eventual behavior aside, like it did seem like his parents like just wanted to be able to spend time with their granddaughter. And like, I think that they put in an effort, and I mean, it doesn't hurt anybody to like try to be polite.
Not at all. And also like grandparents are great. Like you give your like the grandparents the kids for a night and you can go have fun with your husband. Like you have options when you have family that you can rely on. But even that, like I feel like she didn't even really like want to let Bryn go, because maybe she felt like, oh well, I don't want to abandon my daughter. And it's like, well, no, it's with family. Like it's different. It's not, you're not leaving the kid with a babysitter for 4 days and just say good luck, like have fun eating weird foods and try not to get traumatized by an avocado. But
totally.
And then there was also one moment where she was kind of talking about how Jason was getting more and more involved in the business, and she said she had to actively try to not get upset when he would desire alone time, because he would spend so much time with the baby when they were traveling. Mm-hmm. And she would get upset that he would want to go to the gym, or if his parents wanted to come over and she was relaxing from a busy trip or whatever, or even just go golfing with his friends, where it's upsetting. It's like, well, yes, he does so much for you. You need to acknowledge that. And you need to acknowledge like there is like a power dynamic in this relationship where like you wear the pants, and the whole relationship is kind of based around like your like crazy career, and so you need to allow that person to like have breathing room and to have things that don't include you, like going to the gym, going golfing. Like, those are very like minimal things that I think people need to feel like a human being outside of their relationship, outside of being a father. Like, you need that. And I don't think she was like, well, unless you're working out right in front of me, like, you're not doing that, bro.
yeah it was rough.
Yeah, it was really rough. I think I have to rewatch Bethany Getting Married, question
mark.
Oh
my gosh, please do. And then we have to talk about it.
Done. You really do know I'm going to be sending you like all the links for her on Martha Stewart show. That's not
I can't wait. I will be like, I'm not going to go to sleep tonight until I get that.
Done. Great. So then we get to rule number 10, which is celebrate, which is celebrating all the amazing things in your life, celebrating your birthday, celebrating ugly Christmas parties, celebrating Halloween, which also felt like a little bit like Arrested Development, where it's like, honey, everybody celebrates those things. Like, you just never have. Like, which was like
so sad.
And like, I know she said, like, you know, even like the fact that her birthday was her mother's birthday, like, probably also has like additional drama in it, where like, you know, maybe your mom didn't get a good gift from the dad and would freak out, and then it's like just trickles throughout the whole family. And I can imagine it was never fun for her, but you gotta celebrate the good with the bad, especially like when you're so successful and you have all these like amazing things happening in your life. You know, you need to celebrate those milestones. And she seems like someone who is constantly like, what's next? What's next? What's next? What's next?
Yeah.
A salad dressing line, shapewear,
body HSN, by Bethany. HSN, yeah. HSN, yeah. HSN.
Like, whatever her next thing is, where it's like, you got to celebrate the wins as they happen, or else like, what the hell is the point of all this hard work if you're not going to like celebrate it?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Allie, this brings us to the end of our A Place of Yes recap. Thank you so much for coming on this journey.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm emotionally exhausted. We laughed. We cried.
I almost did cry a couple times.
It's a lot. Like, it's a lot for anybody to process. And listeners, I just hope that you're doing okay after it. Because I understand it's a little overwhelming.
Well, where can people find you, follow you, and listen to your amazing podcast?
Yeah, so you can follow my podcast at SSR Pod on Instagram and Twitter. You can follow me on my like personal Instagram at @ahofkosick, but I'm not nearly as active there as I am on SSR Pod, where I share me and my dog and books and podcasts and sort of all of the other things that go on in my life. If you're a Facebook person, you can find the podcast on Facebook by searching the SSR Podcast, or if you want like a smaller chattier group, there's a smaller chattier group called the SSR Podcast Community. And we have new episodes of the podcast that drop every Tuesday, pretty much on all of your favorite podcatchers. So I would love to have you listen and join the SSR community.
Sweet. And I know you're a Vanderpump Rules fan, and I have to break the news to you. Jax and Brittany are pregnant.
Did you just, is this breaking?
I literally just got a text message. Oh my God. My phone was vibrating and I'm like, who the fuck is texting me? And was like, oh wow, I knew it.
Oh my gosh, are you fucking kidding me?
Ew.
I currently don't follow either of them on Instagram, just sort of as like a statement, but like I might have to start following her. Oh my God. It was only a matter of time. I'm so happy that we're experiencing this together.
I know. this is some real time finding out. Wow.
This is like live footage of us discovering. Wow. I don't even know. Like, well, okay. So now we just have to wait for the Bubbas, because then like that's has
he
to be
he cannot
happening.
Get it up. He cannot. He has not gotten it up since 2013. Like, I really
it's
don't
all very interesting, but I cannot believe Brittany and Jax. Wow. This is big.
Oh my God. I have such a good show to talk about on Friday. Now I'm like, I have Teddy stuff. I have this pregnancy. This is wild.
Yeah. I mean, you have a lot going on right now.
I have a lot of work to do.
I hope that you are ready to get plenty of rest, because your job just got a lot more interesting and a lot harder.
Wow. Well, I'm happy for them. Oh my God. My friend texts me, I am without words. I'm like, I am as well. We will
I do think
this.
She'll be like a really like good mom. Like, I think she really wants to be a mom. But then I think maybe they won't last. Not, I don't like to make those kinds of predictions, but I do think that like she's going to be really into being a mom, and he's probably not going to be able to handle it, especially if they end up having like more than one kid. And I think she's just going to end up being like a rock star mom, regardless of like his bullshit.
Yeah, I feel like we're gonna get a spinoff in like 4 years where it's like Brittany's a single mom, she goes through dating trials and tribulations, maybe she moves back to Kentucky. Like, I would like that.
I would love that for her. Me too.
All right, Allie. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate you doing this hour and a half long recap. Jesus Christ. I usually cap it at an hour, but at a certain point I was like, oh my God, I'm still fucking scrolling.
I mean, we were just having fun. Thank you so much for having me. This was the best.
Of course. This was great. All right. Have a great night. Thanks again.